Okay, we're back with our rolling coverage of the martyrdom anniversary, the third martyrdom anniversary of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. We're now going over to Kerman, where large numbers of people have gathered to pay their respect at the tomb, at the graveside of top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. We now go over live to Press TV headquarters under this large gathering in the southeastern Iranian city of Kerman at the tomb of the top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani.
Believe was a hero not only to the people of Iran, but also the people of the region for his chivalrous acts, his endeavor in fighting terrorism and oppression, fighting against oppression in the West Asia region. Back to you, Marzia.
At the Methi, I'm looking at the images coming from behind you right now, and I'm seeing it's really interesting the amount of young people there on the ground. There are those, and there are many times they talk about the supporters of the Islamic Republic, and that it's the older generation, those who actually supported the revolution. And I'm seeing so many young people there on the ground there today. Your take, is that just the image that I'm seeing behind you, or in general, your assessment of those who are showing their respects today?
Well, I've actually spoken to many of them. Indeed, they are very young. There are many people who are teenagers in their early 20s. I talked to them. I asked them this question, that you haven't seen the Islamic Revolution. You have not seen the eight-year war, imposed war on Iran. And yet, you have all converged here to pay tribute to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Now, they all had a very, let's say, united answer, and that was General Soleimani unified the people of Iran. In what sense, you might ask? Well, it's not just about fighting terrorism. It's the ideology of Haj Qasem, which is we must protect, we must support every man, woman, child, no matter where they are, anyone who's oppressed, anyone who's threatened by oppressive regimes around the world, let it be Iraq, Syria, or Palestine. We must defend them. And people who are here see Haj Qasem as a role model, as someone who taught them to be selfless, to be modest, and to care for others. Something else that I have to mention, there are lots of young people here, like my friend here, who provide services for people who have traveled to Kerman. And they are young. When you talk to them, they say they are in love with Haj Qasem. They are in love with Haj Qasem because he taught them how to serve people. And they say the biggest lesson we learned from Haj Qasem is to serve the people, no matter where they are from or what their social status is. Back to you, Max.
Very beautiful indeed. Thanks so much, Mehdi Abbasian, for that update out of Kerman. And now I would like to welcome our guests here for this part of our rolling coverage. Out of London, Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masood Shajare, and out of Belfast, journalist, author, and activist Fra Hughes. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off in London. And Masood, good to see you. When I was listening to what Mehdi was saying in Kerman and other guests, to me, it's this classic battle, though it sounds simplistic, between good and evil. I mean, because we have this self-sacrifice of the resistance front, of trying to protect others, trying to bring about security, calm, peace. And then we have this other entity trying to continue to create chaos and death and destruction. It sounds simplistic, but is it accurate, Masood?
Absolutely. I think you just said it on the right point. The reality is this is sort of the battle between evil and good. And the fact is that he was exemplary in that direction, because it wasn't just he managed to sort of see through illusions of evil. You know, we are seeing in the name of democracy, in the name of empowerment, United States and its allies have killed millions of people in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, and it goes on and on. Their whole existence and interference has always resulted in death and destruction, and create havoc in the region and on. And here was a man who stood up, not only managed to see through these illusions and realize the evil of reality of what United States, Israel, and its allies are doing in the region, but also dedicated his life to it. I mean, the dedication that he put in, sort of the sacrifices that he made, sacrifices on a personal level, sacrifices vis-a-vis his family life, his personal interests. He put everything. I mean, he was actually given all, and this really exemplary. We are sort of seeing heroes being talked about, but here was a reality, a real hero in our life, not just in the history books, not just companions of the prophet, but in reality is someone who really was there and did what should have been done and sacrifice, and you know, he made a huge difference. When you think about sort of the Daesh, that's a small part of what Daesh was managing to do in Iraq, in Kurdish area, what it doing with the Yazidis and so forth and so on. And he mobilized the community internally and externally, and actually was the only person and only power who actually went there in person and took the responsibility of addressing this great injustice. You know, it really always sort of affects me so much when I see his speeches, his talk to the ordinary soldier and ordinary volunteers, and he says, look, in the village that you're targeting.
Master, I'm going to interrupt you. Master, I'm going to interrupt you because we're having some audio difficulties, and hopefully we can take care of that and improve the audio on that. And viewers, you're looking at these live images out of Tehran, where this is a commemorative ceremony, where we see lots of people have gathered, and we see some of the major generals here today. And we're waiting for President Raisi, who is going to be addressing this audience, and we're going to switch back over as soon as that happened. Right now I'm crossing and go over to Belfast. And Ron Hughes, thanks so much for being with us. You heard my question. I said, was it simplistic or whatever? There's good and evil. And it takes us back to the unbelievable images that we saw in the beginning of Daesh, and people being burnt alive, and beheadings, and crucifixions, and all of this insanity that people had never seen before. And yet these events, this terrorist group was backed by the same group that killed General Soleimani and waved the flag of human rights throughout the world. Your assessment of it all?
I think your analogy of like good and evil is very good, but what's sprung to my mind is right and wrong. I think what we're talking about is in the person and personification of General Soleimani is someone who knew the difference between right and wrong, a person who had a moral compass and knew what direction that compass pointed in. You're talking about someone who is seen as a role model, as a leader, as an inspirational figure to the generations that will come after him. A lot of people on the left in the West would automatically think of, you know, Che Guevara, Fidel Castro, Hugo Chavez. But a lot of people on the left in Western Europe and Western society would not put General Soleimani in that type of company. But I absolutely would, because from the conversation that we're just having here, it's obvious that the general was an internationalist, not just a nationalist, not just someone who, as head of the Quds force, was given the kind of reef to protect Iran and Iranian nationals from the existential threat that's posed by Western imperialism from America, France, Germany, Britain, and increasingly Israel. So for someone who led from the front, from someone who went behind enemy lines, I was reading some of the stories that are associated with the general when he was involved in the protection of Iran in the war launched, a proxy war launched by America through Iraq upon the Iranian people. At one time, he brought back goats in order to feed his troops, and he got the nickname Goat Thief. On another expedition, he had to put on the uniform of a dead Iraqi soldier. He then proceeded to go into the Iraqi mess, have his dinner, and commandeer a brand new Toyota 4x4, which he drove back through the Iranian lines. A man who stood alongside his soldiers under a chemical weapons attack. So a man who led from the front, a man who is inspirational, a man who knows right from wrong, as well as good from evil. I think the very fact that he was martyred and assassinated by Western imperialists, who you have said were behind Daesh, behind the destabilization of Syria, behind the destabilization of Yemen, behind the siege on Gaza, behind the destruction of Libya, and further destabilization of Lebanon, and the illegal unilateral sanctions that they have placed on Iran. This man was murdered because he was a shining light. He helped create the axis of resistance. He was the glue that appears to have held together both Sunni and Shia militias. He was able to cross the sectarian divide. He was able to show not only West Asia, but anyone who cares to take a look at the man's life, you can see that what he was trying to, his vision of a reality of a new world was one filled with justice. It was one filled with equality. It was one filled with humanity. Now, I don't know how much of that came from his faith as an Islamist, but I would like to believe that also a large part of that came from the size of the heart that he had, the concern he had for other people, and the empathy that he chose to display for those who were oppressed in Palestine and further afield. So to me, he is an icon. He is someone that we can learn from. I think that his, what would you call that, now that he's passed, his, you know, the reflections on his life, what he tried to achieve, what he tried to do. He did bring in the accents of resistance. He has brought it to a point where it can successfully challenge the Israeli military presence in the region. And going forward, I think, you know, people should like learn, it should be like a military school that learns from his tactics. Because not only was he a military man, he was a consummate diplomat. And in fact, had he decided to go into politics, he could have risen very far within the Iranian-Persian political family.
Thank you. And viewers, you're looking at these live images now coming out of the capital, Iran, Tehran, there as people are gathering in mass, commemorative occasion that they have come out to show that they have not forgotten what happened on this day, January 3rd, 3 years ago, of course, as General Soleimani, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and their companions were assassinated in Baghdad, Iraq. And now you're looking at another venue in Tehran where people have gathered in mass and were waiting for, actually, President Raisi to come and address that audience. And, of course, we will be switching over as soon as he comes. Back to Masoud. Hopefully we've improved on the audio. Masoud, when we're looking at this situation, we're talking about the classic good and evil. And our guest in Belfast was just talking about the international aspect of General Soleimani and his way. And you are in London right now, and you see these massive crowds that are gathering throughout the country. 3 years later, a military leader, a strategist, and the outpour of admiration 3 years later. I mean, what does that say about the resistance? What does that say about this Iranian nation and being dedicated to the values of the revolution from more than 43 years ago? Okay, it seems that we have lost Masoud briefly. We'll try to get him back on the line. You're looking at these live images there coming out of Tehran. And it's not just Tehran, but it's throughout the country today as people have gathered and continue to gather to show their love for this martyr. Martyr of the revolution, a martyr of resistance. And we have seen ceremonies throughout Iran for the last week. And it is not just Iran. I'm going to switch back over to Belfast now until I get London back on the line. But it's not just Iran, we have seen commemorative meetings throughout the region, whether we're talking about in Yemen or Lebanon or Iraq. And that is the part that you were just talking about, the international aspect of General Soleimani and the importance of that being that adhesive, part of that adhesiveness of bringing this resistance together and keeping the resistance together, and how that is a threat to American hegemony.
Yes, there's no doubt that what he was able to do, the very fact that he could cross the sectarian divide, that he could have a Sunni militia as well as Shia militia coming together, viewing the kind of wider regional conflict. If we were to clear the table and we were to look at what is destabilizing the whole West Asia and Africa, African continents, the first thing that would come forward and come center would be the colonial past of Western imperialism and its occupation and imposition of its values upon the countries that it militarily occupied. Then you had national wars of liberation that chased out the British and chased out the French and chased out the Spanish and chased out the Italians from Africa and from West Asia. Now those revolutions and those periods, those national liberation fronts, they had to protect their revolutions, which is exactly what has happened from 1979 in Iran. What you had was the Cultural Revolution in direct response to the oppression of the Iranian people by the Shah, who himself was installed in a coup in 1952-1953 when the elected leader, Mossadegh, was removed from office. So from 1979 until today, you have had a continued counter-revolution that is working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year to destroy the cohesion of the Iranian people. And what we witnessed recently with the riots, with the murder of unarmed security personnel by rioters, by thugs, by terrorists in Iran, is exactly what General Soleimani was trying to fight. But he wasn't just trying to fight it in Kerman. He wasn't just trying to fight it in Iran. He fought it in Syria. He fought it in Yemen. He fought it in Gaza. He fought it in Lebanon. The man himself was someone who I'm not sure we will witness his like again. I pray to God that we do, because we need leaders like General Soleimani. We need men with vision. But we need men who are not morally bankrupt, who are not morally corrupt, but people who use their morality and their humanity in order to help preserve peace and dignity and a better sustainable life for other people. So he was the glue that held together the axis of resistance. I'm sure that the Western intrigue and Machiavellian plans are already in place to try and disrupt those ties that he built, to try and disrupt those different communication networks and different militias that he was able to arm, support and train for a wider regional collective. So, you know, different countries have different security policies and they can have regional cooperation pacts. And that's what the axis of resistance is becoming more and more and more. The attack on Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa last year showed the opportunity, we gave an opportunity for the axis of resistance that General Soleimani helped bring into being and continue to exist today. They spoke with a unified voice at different times. The Ansar Allah movement in Yemen talked about, you know, there being problems for Israel if they continued to attack Al-Aqsa. And we heard the same from Hezbollah, and we heard the same from the Sunni militia of Hamas. So there is increasing cooperation between these groups. There is increasing cohesion. And, you know, if you attack one, you're maybe attacking all members of the group. And the strength of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon and the fear that it has instilled into the military infrastructure of the Zionist apartheid identity proves, and Iran is another one, that if you're attacked by a bully, you stand up to the bully, and the bully must think twice as to what he does.
Let me just jump in here, Frank, because of course I'm sorry to interrupt you. I mean, you're sitting in Belfast, and when you're talking about this growing opposition to the hegemonic entity, we look at not only in this region, but we see more and more this cooperation between, for example, members of the resistance in this region and, for example, Venezuela or other countries in Central and South America. Again, I said that you're sitting in Belfast, the significance, of course, being with the Irish and their struggle against hegemony. Do you see a natural affinity growing more and more between the oppressed in general, no matter the region in the world that they are living in order to confront the hegemonic front?
Yes, because what we have is we have people in power who are part of, we've used a phrase like the proletariat, the working class. They are people who were oppressed themselves. So when these people come into positions of power, they are not there to aggrandize themselves. They are not there to line their own pockets with the spoils of government and the spoils of power and the spoils of the backing of the corporate sector and the kind of capitalist infrastructure that's in a lot of these countries. So we've had the colonization of many countries in the world. We have had the movement of wealth from the global south to the global north. We've had the West, which makes up around 20% of the world's population, having something like 80% of the world's, not natural resources because they've stolen so much of it, but they have 80% of the world's financial resources. Now, I have been very blessed in my activism and that I was able to go on a solidarity visit to Venezuela and I met with some government ministers. And when I was there in 2019, I was saying, you know, why don't you join with Russia, who are under sanctions? Why don't you join with Iran, who are under sanctions? Why don't you join with Russia? We are seeing a multipolar world developing in front of our very eyes. Now, you could say my enemy's enemy is my friend, and therefore, you know, the devil makes strange bedfellows, bringing groups and organizations that have different political ideologies. But, you know, the government in Syria tries its best by the Syrian people to take the taxes and the national resources that belong to the people and redistribute it to the people. Now, that could just be in free health service, homes, jobs for as many people as possible in society. In Venezuela, they've built something between 3 and 4 million public homes under the Chavez and now the Maduro governments. I've also been to Damascus on 5 occasions. I've been to Gaza, and I've been to the West Bank, and I've been to Beirut, and I've also been to Cairo. Like, that resume is from me as one simple solidarity activist. But by traveling extensively and meeting lots of people, I do not see cultural barriers or religious barriers between the people of Syria and the people of Beirut and the people of Venezuela and the people of Gaza. Because I have met people in all these societies, and everyone speaks about dignity. Everyone speaks about freedom from oppression. Everybody talks about a fair distribution of wealth in society. So you can have an Islamist society that is run along religious basis. But if that is done correctly, then it will put the good of the many before the greed of the few. And you can go to a socialist type country like Cuba or Venezuela or Nicaragua. And if you talk to the people in charge, they say our job is to represent the needs of the people as best we can in their interests. And you go to America, and you go to France, and you go to Germany, and you go to Israel, and what you will get are governments who are financed and backed and exploited by the corporate greed of the capitalist system. You will find individuals who care nothing for the life of others in their own country, never mind countries like Iran or Yemen, where we have this deadly man-made famine where up to 23 million people are at risk of dying because Saudi Arabia does not want the Ansarallah movement to be in charge of Yemen, although the people of Yemen may very well want the Ansarallah movement in charge. So there's a collective responsibility on all of us to protect our friends, our neighbours and our families to our best ability. But that should include having the humanity to reach out to others in their hour of need, be that with money, be that with food, be that with time, or be that with military assistance. Syria would not be standing as it is today on 2 feet without the presence of Hezbollah and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And General Soleimani has brought those people together, has shown them the vision of what a new world without American hegemony can look like. And I pray that within the next 10 to 20 years, we will see this multipolar world, which I don't know whether or not General Soleimani spoke about a multipolar world. That is exactly what his actions have proved over several decades, that he was an internationalist, that he was prepared to die as he lived, standing up to Western imperialism.
All right, viewers, you're looking at the split images now coming from various parts of Iran. You were looking at Kerman there, of course, where General Soleimani is buried, as people throughout this week for over a week have been gathering and going to visit the grave of General Soleimani. Of course, Kerman also being the birthplace of the general. And also, you were looking at Tehran, where various commemorative ceremonies are taking place. A large one actually is taking place, and that we're waiting for the president, President Raisi, to address the crowd there, and we'll be switching over as that take place. I believe I have Masoud Shajere. Am I correct? Do I have Masoud back? Well, maybe not quite. We'll have Masoud, hopefully, very soon. Again, you've been looking at these live images coming through from throughout the country today. We're 3 years later, on January 3rd, that people are saying that basically that he is a hero, General Soleimani is their hero, and that they will be continuing his way. We saw earlier out of Kerman our correspondent on the ground there, Mehdi, showing young people of all ages, from the smallest of infants and throughout the various ages, showing them that this is not a revolution as has been shown by some of the corporate media in the region and in the West, that this is the supporters of the revolution are these old people who were out there 40-some years ago. We are seeing so many young people come out, and that is significant, of course, throughout this time. Of course, the young people playing that major role in continuing the way of course, not just General Soleimani, but the way of the revolution from 1979, and, of course, the founder, Imam Khomeini. I do believe that, again, we're going to be switching back to Belfast until we can establish that call again in London. Right now, you're looking at these live images, and the crowds, it's amazing. I mean, it is packed. And it has been that way for the last several days. As I was saying earlier, that it was hard for people to even get to Kerman because of the lack of tickets. Everything was packed or booked, from airplanes to trains to buses. So it is quite amazing to see the number of people who have gathered. And, of course, today, a work day. It is not a holiday here in Iran. Despite that, people have come from north, south, east, and west to gather today in Kerman, or if not in Kerman, in their own cities, to show their solidarity with the resistance, with the revolution, and that they want to continue the way of General Soleimani. I believe that we have Masoud back. Masoud, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, fantastic, fantastic. Well, Masoud, I was talking about, you know, just the resistance in general. And you're sitting in London, and the contrast between, for example, General Soleimani was a military leader, really served as a diplomat. And 3 years after his martyrdom, we see unbelievable amount of people turning out today in Iran. And I have to say, we have seen commemorative ceremonies, not just here in Iran, but in various countries, resistance countries. The significance of that, do you think that the average person in London could ever relate to a leader such as this, so moral, and who has stood his, kept his integrity throughout this time, that 3 years later, despite all the pressure that Iranians have been under because of the hegemonic front, despite this, they still come out and they talk about General Soleimani and support the revolution. Can people in these secular nations understand this, even relate to this?
Well, the reality is that I think if they were given an opportunity to be able to find out exactly what General Soleimani was. I mean, every Iranian need to be proud of being from the same nation that produce a man like Soleimani. But he was not just Iranian. He wasn't just Muslim. He went far, far beyond that. The reality is that his popularity was unbelievable. I mean, you know, you're talking about 3 years on and what is happening in Iran right now, which is fantastic to see. But the reality is that his funeral was the largest in man's history. I mean, I haven't seen anything like it. It wasn't just in Iran. It was in Iran, it was in Yemen, it was in Syria, it was in Lebanon, Iraq, and far, far beyond. Even in London, you know, people just went and gathered outside one of the mosques without being organized or anything, holding candles.
it really was those who understood him, those who were given the opportunity to understand, and that's very important because, Marzia, you know and I know how they try using the media to demonize General Soleimani.
Right.
How they actually stopped anyone speaking any truth regarding him. How they tried to turn him into a terrorist and so forth. But the reality is that they not a movie star or a pop star. Here is a military general who's got the biggest funeral of the history of man. And that actually speaks volume. That actually says, you know, when you see that in Iraq, Yazidi community were actually seeing him as a savior of them. And, you know, same thing in Syria, same thing in Palestine, same thing in Yemen. And beyond that, you know, people in Iran did not see him as a general. They saw him as a people's man. And that sort of contribution that he made was incredible, let alone being made by a military man. I mean, it wasn't that he had one of the hugest sort of army institution to get up and sort of point a finger and the army goes down there. He was a person that when he saw the need, he got up, he went there, he mobilized people, and he helped them, and he actually made them understand that they could rely on themselves. They could actually be self-reliant and deal with the evil that they're facing. And that was the greatest contribution of him. He actually turned people into empowered community who could organize their own safety, their own security against the evil of that they're facing. And I think from that point of view, he was unique.
Yeah, very interesting what you've just talked about as far as empowerment and key, of course, in this battle when hegemonic front, of course, always want to make others pessimistic and not have hope or confidence in their abilities. We've been looking at these various ceremonies throughout the country today. This is the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Soleimani. We're going to switch to one of them right here in Tehran, where Press TV's Saman Khujuri is at right now. Saman, tell me where you are and what's going on.
I'm talking to you from Imam Khomeini Grand Mesela, and now, as you can see right behind me, thousands of people have come to this prayer site in order to attend the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani. As you can see all around me, people are here, and also many more people are outside this prayer site in order to commemorate and mark the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated and killed back in 2020 as a result of a drone attack by U.S. forces. Indeed, what we see today is actually the presence of people at this ceremony to once again keep alive the memories of Qasem Soleimani and also to keep alive the path set by Qasem Soleimani many years ago. Well, as you and also our international viewers may already know, Qasem Soleimani, General Qasem Soleimani, has become a symbol for international resistance, and he has made great efforts in the past couple of years, better say more than 30 years after the Islamic Revolution, in liberating parts which have been occupied, territories occupied by the oppressed powers. And indeed, he is an icon. He is a symbol of international resistance against global arrogance. And of course, although the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has put an end to his life, his legacy will remain for good and will continue to survive in the future. And actually, his legacy of fighting terrorism and also any sort of arrogance is actually kind of a legacy which definitely will remain in the future. And he has become an icon for people who want to fight a sort of oppressions and Indeed, he has, his life has breathed new life to an energy to different sorts of resistance fronts in the region. And we see that people who have come all the way here to attend this ceremony are here once again to say that the path of General Qasem Soleimani will continue because he has injected fresh energy into resistance currents and anti-terrorism currents in the region. So for today, what we expect for today will be the keynote speaker, Iran's President, Dr. Ebrahim Raisi, who will address the crowds here. And definitely, if you want to put a clear definition of the pure characteristics and the personality of General Qasem Soleimani, we can refer to the words and statements by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who said that the most outstanding characteristic of Qasem Soleimani has been his honesty and sincerity in his responsibility. And he is one of the most religious personality in the Islamic world. This is, quote unquote, the exact statement by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, because purely, genuinely, General Qasem Soleimani, aside being a perfect, better say, kind of a soldier for his country, he has been a great commander for his country and the Islamic world. Purely, he has been a sincere and honest person, and he has been so religious, and he has never forgotten divine aspects of his life. So that's why his assassination, his martyrdom after 3 years, has brought thousands of people here for the ceremony to mark his assassination martyrdom anniversary, Marzia.
All right. Thanks so much, Saman. And, of course, we'll be switching back to you as deemed necessary. And viewers, as I said earlier, we're waiting for President Raisi to address the nation, and we'll be covering that speech live as soon as it starts. We're continuing our rolling coverage today, January 3rd. This is the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Soleimani and all those with him. Masoud, I'm going to stay with you. We were talking in general about the significance of all this. As you are representative of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, I've been talking this morning about the legality. I guess I've lost Masoud again, it appears. So we will not cross over to London. Again, viewers, you're looking at these live images are going to be coming in soon from different parts of Iran as we commemorate this, the third anniversary of the revolution. There we're seeing people who have come, and actually I believe that's some of the family of General Soleimani that you were looking at just there. And, of course, some of the higher-ranking generals also who are at this commemorative ceremony. We've been seeing, basically for over a week now, various ceremonies commemorating what happened on this day, January 3rd, 2020. And the significance, of course, saying people are saying that they will continue the way of General Soleimani, will continue the way of the resistance, and the Islamic Revolution is stronger than ever. And here you can see images coming from that ceremony there of people from various ethnicities representing all of Iran and the region of the various ethnicities. It's not about ethnicities, it's not about nationalities, it's about right over wrong. And that's what General Soleimani stood for, what the resistance stands for, and what the Islamic Revolution continues to stand for. Now you're looking at those images coming from Kerman, of course, Kerman being where General Soleimani is buried. And again, today we're seeing people gather in mass there, visiting the grave of this great hero, basically saying that they admired him and will continue his way. These are the kind of comments that we've heard throughout this week in various interviews that I've been monitoring for domestic television or international television, when they've been talking to people and saying, we've come here first to show our respect to the way that what he stood for and to also say that we are here. We will continue his way. I will continue my discussion with my guests. I still have journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast, I hope anyway. Fra Hughes, are you with me?
Still here. Hi.
Fra, can you hear me?
I can hear you, oh, yes.
Okay.
Hello.
Yes, I have your voice now. You know, we're looking at unbelievable images. I mean, just the numbers that have shown up today. And it takes me back to 3 years ago, Fra. I mean, it was absolutely amazing event. I mean, I'm talking about the funeral procession of these heroes and the amount of people that turned out, whether we're talking about in Baghdad, Iraq, or Tehran, or Mashhad, or Qom, or the various cities in this nation. And it was unbelievable, like nothing, probably the world, to be honest, has ever seen. Significance of the dedication, that dedication to what is truth, and a martyr, a true martyr, that people felt that he did not do it because of his pockets, because of political interests, but because, again, going back to that classic battle of good over bad. I want to talk about the need of the world for these type of individuals, especially in the West today, that we see becoming more and more morally bankrupt, whether we're talking about political leaders or military leaders. It's not about the people. It's not about a specific cause. It's basically about the industrial military complex and the pockets of the 1%. Your take, Fra.
Yes. Again, if you look at the people who are in charge, especially in kind of the Western civilized nations, these people are corrupt. I mean, you have the phrase, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, that's what we've had, and that's what we continue to live under. We have, if we pick any European country, but if you pick specifically the United Kingdom and you pick the United States of America, we have been brainwashed from being young to believe that there is a left and right politics at play, and that we live in a democracy where every 4 to 5 years we have the opportunity to go to the ballot box and to reject the policies, principles that are being kind of used by the government at the time. And traditionally, if you voted for the Conservative Party, you were voting for, you know, stricter law and order, you were voting for a small businessman, you were voting for free enterprise and the capitalist system. And then the opposite effect was, if you were voting for the Labour Party, you were voting for the working class, you were voting for trade unionism, you were voting for free education, you were voting for minimum pay, minimum hours, all the hard-won kind of benefits that the working class people have, only having to work 40 hours a week, only having to work 5 days a week if they choose to do so. These are all brought from, it's supposed to be the left-right dichotomy, but we don't have that any longer in the West. What we have are two political parties. So if you don't like the Conservatives, you vote for Labour. If you don't like the Republicans, you vote for the Democrats. And it's all become about personalities and not about policies. So if you vote for Trump, you're a racist. If you vote for Biden, you're voting for the working class. But in every instance, you're voting for the industrial war complex, the military complex. And that's what we have. We have corporations running the corridors of Washington and the pavements of Parliament in Britain. We need heroes, because that's what strikes me about General Soleimani more than anything else. This man is a hero. And when times are dark, when times are difficult, when people are struggling, people need a hero to step forward. So cometh the hour, cometh the man. And in this case, it was for decades that General Soleimani stood up to the foreign interference within the national borders of Iran and the extended borders of West Asia. A man who was a shining light to others to say, he shone a light to say, this is how we can live, this is what we can do. Masoud talked about empowerment, which I think was very important. He gave people, a leader instills confidence. A leader makes people believe that they can overcome the obstacles and the challenges that are placed before them. And that's exactly what General Soleimani did. His role as an international leader was to show people that there is another way, that there is a better way, that we can live with and from humanity and put people before profit and put people first. And the needs of the people are more important than the greed of the businessman and the corporate view.
Viewers, you're continually looking at those live images coming out of the Islamic Republic of Iran today, January 3rd, 2023. Of course, 3 years since the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani and his companions. You're looking at the audience actually in Tehran today, where people have gathered from all over the country. And we see various individuals that have come from outside the country who are also present. And you've had images throughout the day also coming from Kerman. These images right now from Kerman, of course, that is where General Soleimani is buried, as people have gathered there in mass today to show their respect for General Soleimani. Well, Masoud, I think I have you back, and hopefully I have you back right now. It's been some technical issues that connected with London today. Masoud, you know, we hear about, because you're from the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and I want to look at that aspect, because when we see this brutal murder, heinous crime that took place 3 years ago, we've seen the UN, of course, condemn it as far as a special rapporteur, saying that there was no legal reasons for the U.S. to do what it did. But nothing has happened as far as holding those entities accountable who commit such crimes. The significance of that, and does that mean that basically we cannot count on this so-called international order, this neoliberal international order, but a new definition, a new order, perhaps one based on the resistance, must be designed, must be implemented if we want to work towards justice in this world? How do you see it, Masoud?
You're absolutely right. I mean, Professor Volker, who's one of the authorities on international law and ex-special rapporteur, said very clearly in one of our webinars that General Soleimani not only wasn't a terrorist, he indeed was a beacon of light in combating terrorism. And sort of his assassination was indeed unlawful. But the issue is not just about the assassination of General Soleimani, but is this concept that we could go send a drone anywhere in the world by United States, Israel, and its allies, and kill anyone they want, and then they sort of put a spin that this was for justice, this was against terrorism, this was to save and secure, bring safety and security to people. The reality is that they themselves admit that 75% of all the assassination by drones are innocent people. You know, they have nothing to do with any sort of criminality. But I will put it to you that 100% are innocent, because they never were taken to a court. They never were even accused. They didn't know what they're being accused of, or any court order or any sort of decree. They were just, you know, the United States and his allies and Israel, they just become judge, jury, and executioner without even sort of putting the accusation of what they are doing. And this sort of barbaric abuse, which creates the law of jungle. I mean, this is what it's been happening, and United States, United Nations, international courts are incompetent to stop it. The reality is that this sort of creation of law of jungle is what is creating most of the conflict and the creating a sort of a hegemony for United States to kill anyone at any time, let alone the head of a section of armed forces of another country. I mean, this is outrageous. If this is now the sort of the law of international law, and so anybody could go and kill anybody, you know, be it they're part of the armed forces of legitimate governments or not, or any individual, innocent people, out of jurisdiction, without any decree or any due process. This is what we are facing. And the international community has failed to uphold the international law, and indeed uphold United States, Israel, Great Britain, and others who are committing this crime day in, day out. So it goes far, far beyond. And I think in some way, our failure, the international community and the human rights organizations and other, our failure to hold United States accountable, to hold Israel accountable, to hold Great Britain accountable when they started this process, is what resulted in seeing now is being expanded, and everybody, if it becomes acceptable behavior, then we're going to see more and more of this. So we're going to have law of jungle continuing, right?
Well, speaking of law of the jungle, Masoud, I mean, we've heard many times from the international arena talking about this assassination was ordered by Donald Trump. But if we look at the U.S. regime in general, we don't see major entities or individuals, Democrat or Republican politicians, condemning this in